Lula and I were here earlier, and Lula thought I'd fit in better if I was a hoe. Ranger put his hands to my waist and slid them up bare skin to where I had my shirt rolled and tucked into my bra. He loosened my shirt and smoothed it down.
"You looked cold," he said.
I was pretty sure he was referring to the state of my nipples, and because it was Ranger, I was also pretty sure he knew cold had nothing to do with it. "I saw Bobby Sunflower leave here about 45 minutes ago, and now Gritch is here," I told him. Ranger looked at the back of the building.
"And you think Vinny might be here?"
"The windows are blacked out upstairs. Originally, I thought the embalming rooms were up there, but Lula saw Bobby Sunflower come down the stairs." I reached into the Jeep and got my sweatshirt. I didn't get a chance to check out anything other than the public areas. Ranger looked at his watch.
"Viewing hours are over. The outdoor light was off when we drove by the front of the building. We can hang here for a while and see what goes down."
I zipped my sweatshirt and leaned against the Jeep with Ranger. He wasn't a guy who made a lot of small talk, and I'd gotten used to the silence. We stood like that for about 10 minutes, and the door opened, and Gritch stepped out. A second guy appeared in the doorway. He flipped the inside light off, and the mortuary parking area was plunged into darkness. We heard the back door click closed, and moments later, car doors opening and slamming shut. Ranger pulled me away from the Jeep, under cover of a building. He leaned into me and shielded me with his body. He was dressed in his usual black. Black t-shirt, black windbreaker, black cargo pants, black running shoes, black gun. His hair was dark brown, and his skin was light brown. Ranger was a shadow. Two car engines turned over and headlights flashed on. The Mercedes rolled past first. The big Lincoln followed. They took the corner and headed for Stark Street. Ranger stayed pressed against me, his hand at my waist, his breathing even. His lips brushed my ear and my cheek and found my mouth, and the contact produced a rush of heat and desire that filled every part of me. Since we were standing on a public street in a part of town that had killings nightly, I suspected this wasn't going any farther than kissing. "Are you playing?" I asked him.
"Yes," he said, "but that could change."
I felt my fingers curl into his shirt, and I made an effort to uncurl them. I put a couple inches between us, and I smoothed out the wrinkles I'd made. "I need to find Vinny," I said. Ranger looked over at the building.
"Get in your car and lock the doors. I'll go inside and look around."
"I'm sure the funeral parlor has an alarm system."
"Even with the best alarm system, there's a 10 to 15 minute window before anyone responds. And in this part of town, the response is a lot longer, if at all."
Ranger jogged to the back door, and within seconds he had the door unlocked. He slipped inside, and a couple minutes later, I heard the alarm go off. I gripped the wheel and watched the building, keeping track of the time. 5 minutes went by. 10 minutes. I had my teeth sunk into my lower lip, and I was thinking, "Get out, get out, get out!" The door opened at 14 minutes. Ranger emerged alone and jogged back to the car.
"I'll follow you home," Ranger said. "I don't want to talk here."
I pulled away from the curb, and when I got to the corner, the stretched Lincoln slid to a stop in front of the funeral home, and three men got out and went to the front door. Ranger and I drove past them and continued on down Stark. Ranger walked me to my apartment and stepped inside. "Obviously, Vinny wasn't being held at Mellon's," I said to him.
"The embalming room is in the basement, and it isn't pretty. The upstairs rooms are being used as a cash drop. There's a counting table and a safe in one of the rooms. The other rooms are storerooms. No sign of Vinny."
"What about Mickey Gritch? Did he make any more stops?"
"I checked with Chet. Mickey Gritch went straight home from Mellon's. Looks like he settled in for the night."
Ranger unzipped my sweatshirt.
"We could be settled in for the night, too."
I moved a step back from him. "Are you feeling domestic?" The corners of his mouth softened into the smallest of smiles.
"I'm feeling friendly."
He closed the distance between us, lifted my bag off my shoulder, and his focus moved from me to the bag.
"Are you carrying?" he asked. "This bag is heavy."
"It's the bottle." I took Uncle Pip's bottle out of my bag and set it on the kitchen counter. Rex came out of his soup can house and looked through the glass aquarium at the bottle. His beady black eyes glistened, his whiskers whirred, and he put two little pink feet on the side of his cage. He blinked once and turned and scurried back into his soup can.
"Why are you carrying this bottle?" Ranger asked.
"This is a bottle I inherited from my Uncle Pip. It's supposed to be lucky, and Lula decided we needed to carry it with us, just in case."
Ranger's smile widened. "Can't hurt," he said.
"Well, it didn't do me any good tonight."
"The night isn't over," Ranger said. "You could still get lucky."
Being a bond enforcement agent almost never requires me to set my alarm clock. Felons are in the wind 24 hours a day, so I can pretty much pick which of those hours I want to go hunting. Lula usually rolls into the office around 9, and I'm usually right behind her. This morning was no different. I'd sent Ranger home early the night before, deciding I wasn't ready to get that lucky. A night with Ranger was tempting, but the cost would be high. My relationship with Morelli was currently on hold. A morning argument in Morelli's kitchen a couple weeks ago had ended with the notion it might not be a bad idea if we saw other people, but the reality was that we weren't. I felt comfortable with flirting and maybe a kiss, but I wasn't comfortable going beyond that with another man right now.
"Hey, girl," Lula said from the bond's office couch. "What's up for today?"
"Dirk McCurdle and a drug guy named Chopper."
"And Vinny," Connie said.
"Yeah," I said, "and Vinny."
"Do you have any leads?" Connie asked.
"I know where he isn't," I told her. "I'd like an address for Dirk's best friend, Ernie Wilkes. I've got one Mrs. McCurdle left. If she isn't helpful, I'll talk to Ernie." Connie punched a few keys on her computer, and it spit out Ernie's address. She wrote the address on a slip of paper and handed it to me.
"He's retired from the button factory, so he should be at home."
The phone rang, and Connie picked it up.
"Yeah," she said. Yeah. "I'll be right there."
She disconnected and grabbed her purse.
"I have to bond out Jimmy Leonard. That means I have to lock the office up for an hour until I get back."
"We could stay here and babysit phones," Lula said.
"No way," Connie said. "I want you out there looking for Vinny. I can't be office manager and bond out people at the same time. I know Vinny's slime, but he pulls his weight here, at least some of the time."
Connie and Vinny were the only ones authorized to write the bonds that released people from jail while they waited for their day in court. I worked as the office bounty hunter, and I signed individual contracts that gave me permission to root out felons who were FTA for their court date. Lula wasn't authorized to do anything, so she just did whatever the heck she wanted. Connie took off for the courthouse, and Lula and I piled into the Jeep. Stella McCurdle lived in North Trenton. Ernie Wilkes and his wife lived a couple blocks from Stella. Good deal for me. I was short of gas money and not excited about the idea of driving all over creation to find McCuddle. I took Olden to Bright Street and turned onto Cherry. I parked in front of Stella's house, and Lula and I got out and went to the door.
"Now this here's more what I'm talking about," Lula said. "This looks like a bigamous house."
It was a narrow, two-story, single-family house, and it was painted lavender with pink trim. Why Lula imagined a bigamist should live in a lavender house was anyone's guess.
"Yep," I said, "this looks like a bigamist house for sure."
"I got high hopes for this wife," Lula said.
Stella McCurdle answered the door in tight lavender stretch pants, little sling-back heels, and a stretchy flower print-wrapped shirt that displayed a decent amount of over-tanned crepe-paper-skinned boob. She had big chunky rings on her fingers and big chunky earrings, lots of makeup, and her hair was a shade short of canary yellow, done up in a 70s bouffant.
"Whoa," Lula said. "It's like Soul Train for seniors."
Stella leaned forward.
"What was that, dear? My hearing's on the blink. I'm all clogged up with wax. I was just on my way to the doctor."
"I'm looking for your husband," I said to Stella.
"What? Your husband? No, thank you," she said. "I don't need any."
"Must be a lot of wax," Lula said.
"Dirk," I yelled. "Where's Dirk?"
"Dirk? Don't know, don't care," she said. "I'm moving on. I'm gonna find myself a new boy toy. Dirk was too old for me anyway."
"That's a spirit," Lula said.
"What?"
Stella yelled.
"What did you say?"
Lula and I screamed goodbye to Stella. We got back into the car, and I drove to Ernie's house. I didn't think Dirk was living with Ernie, but I thought Ernie might be talking to him.
What time is it? Lula asked. I might need a donut. Is it donut time?
I'm thinking about eating healthier, I said. More vegetables and fewer donuts.
What's that about?
I don't know. It just came over me.
It's a bad idea. What do I look like, Mr. Green Jeans? How would it sound if I said, it's vegetable time? People would think I was a nut. Nobody gets a craving for a vegetable. And I'm on the one diet. What am I going to do with one carrot or one asparagus? They're not mood enhancers, if you see what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying, but there aren't any donuts between here and Ernie's house.
I guess I could wait. And maybe you're right about the healthy eating. I'm going to get a carrot cake donut.
I drove a block, pulled over, and called Ernie. I had a feeling he'd be more helpful if I got him away from his wife. My guess was his wife wouldn't be happy to learn he was still palling around with Dirk the bigamist. Ernie answered, and I introduced myself. Is your wife home? I asked him.
Yes,
he said. Would she be upset if she knew you were still friends with Dirk McCurdle?
What's this about?
I can knock on your door and talk to you in front of your wife, or we can meet somewhere for just a couple minutes. I need to find Dirk.
Okay.
Just go out in your car or go for a walk and I'll follow you.
Okay.
And he hung up. 5 minutes later, a car pulled out of the Wilkes driveway and headed for Olden. The car pulled to the curb after 3 blocks, and Ernie Wilkes got out.
I don't know anything about Dirk McCurdle,
Ernie said to Lula and me.
We used to be friends, but I don't see him anymore.
When was the last time you talked to him? I asked. Ernie hesitated a beat.
A long time ago.
Try again, I told him. Ernie blew out a sigh.
A couple days ago. He's got a new wife. At least he says she's a wife.
Do you know her name? Do you know where she lives?
Her name's Dolly. I don't know her last name. He said they met at the senior center on Greenwood, and he said she has a house close by there.
Does Dirk have his own place? Ernie shook his head.
Not that I know about. He's always lived in his wife's houses. I tell you, he's a real character.
I thanked Ernie, gave him my card, and Lula and I took Olden to Greenwood.
Hold up here, Lula said. There's a bakery on the right, and I bet they got healthy donuts. Like maybe they got a whole wheat and green bean cruller.
Chapter 6 I pulled into the small lot and waited while Lula ran in. I had my window down, and I was in a zone, staring into the bakery, not thinking. My skin prickled at the nape of my neck, and a rush of heat fluttered through my stomach. I caught a hint of Bulgari green shower gel and knew the reason for the heat. Ranger. He bent to talk to me through the open window.
There's a problem in the Atlanta office, he said. I'm on my way to the airport. I should be back sometime tomorrow. In the meantime, call Tank if you need help. I've asked Chet to report Gritch's travels directly to you.
Tank was Ranger's next in command. He was the guy who watched Ranger's back. His name said it all. Thanks, I said. Be careful. Ranger smiled at that. Hard to tell if he was smiling because someone cared enough to say be careful, or if he thought the idea was funny. Minutes after Ranger left, Lula hauled herself up into the Jeep.
The best I could do was blueberry, Lula said. They didn't have no vegetable donuts, and I got a strawberry jelly-filled and a pumpkin spice and a banana scone. Wait a minute. Is pumpkin a vegetable? Does that count?
You must have 800 calories in that bag.
Yeah, but the diet says I can have one of anything.
One donut, not one of each kind.
You don't know that for sure, Lula said.
Have you lost any weight on this diet?
No, I gained a couple, but I think it's water retention.
The senior center is in a big old house that was remodeled to accommodate bingo. It runs night and day, and it smells like crackers. I've learned from past experience it's best to park on the far perimeter of the lot. At least half the seniors who come for pinochle or bingo are legally blind from macular degeneration, and they park by feeling their way along with their bumpers. I left Lula in the Jeep with the donuts, and I crossed the lot and went straight to the admin office just inside the center's front door. An older woman in a turquoise smock was at the desk. She looked up at me and smiled. Yes, dear, she said. How can I help you? I'm looking for my grandmother's friend, Dolly. You must mean Dolly Malinsky. She isn't here right now. In fact, I haven't seen her for some time now. Do you know where she lives? Do you have a phone number? No, I'm afraid not. We don't keep any of that information. I know she lives close because she would walk to Bingo when the weather was nice. I returned to the Jeep and called Connie. Dolly Malinsky, I said. Can you get me an address? A couple minutes later, Connie came back on the line. She's on Stanley Street, number 401 Stanley. I don't know Stanley, I said to her. I'm at the senior center. Can you give me directions? She's two blocks away. Take Applegate to Stanley. I drove two blocks down Applegate, turned at Stanley, and parked in front of 401. It was a tidy little white house with a postage stamp front lawn presided over by a 3-foot-tall ceramic gnome. Lula and I marched up to the front door, and I knocked. The door opened, and a lady not much taller than the gnome looked out at me. She had short, snow-white hair, a pleasant round face, and she was wearing shocking pink yoga pants and a matching short-sleeved t-shirt.
Yes? She asked.
I'm looking for Dirk McCurdle, I told her. Is he here?
Yes, she said, but he's sleeping. Honestly, I don't know how that man can sleep like he does. I've already gone to my Tai Chi class, put a stew in the slow cooker, and fed the cats.
It's important that I talk to him. Could you wake him?
I can try, but he's a very sound sleeper.
She sped off, and Lula and I stepped into the living room. It was filled with overstuffed furniture and cats. There was an orange cat on the couch, a striped cat next to the orange cat, a black cat draped over a chair back, and a second tabby cat sprawled on the floor.
There's cats everywhere in here, Lula said, and I'm allergic to cats. I'm gonna have a cat attack.
Dolly hustled back into the room.
He's still sleeping, she said. Maybe you can come back some other day.
Dirk, I yelled. Bond enforcement, I need to talk to you. Nothing. Are you sure he's here? I asked Dolly.
Of course he's here. It's Tuesday. I don't mean to be rude, but I'm real busy. I'm behind schedule. I've got kitty litters to clean. I gotta get the car in for service, and I'm meeting the girls for lunch.
Do you mind if I take a look for myself? I asked her.
No, go right ahead. I'd get him up for you, but I haven't got the time. He's a wonderful man. He can play bingo with the best of them, but he's slow as molasses in the morning. Bedroom's in the back.
I moved past Dolly to the back of the house in the master bedroom, pushing cats out of my way as I walked. I could see Lula from the corner of my eye, shooing cats away, holding her nose. Lula and I inched into the room and looked at Dirk.
Uh-oh,
Lula said. I bit into my lower lip.
How long has Dirk been sleeping like this? I yelled to Dolly.
Since last night. He went to bed early, said he had indigestion.
I hauled my cell phone out of my bag and called 911. We need an officer at 401 Stanley Street, I said, and an EMT truck. Hold the siren.
Is there something wrong? Dolly asked.
I'm really sorry, but I'm pretty sure Dirk's dead, I told her. Dolly took a close look at him and poked him.
Yep, he's dead all right. Damn, this is the third husband that's died on me in the past year. I've got to start marrying younger men. Good thing I didn't take his name. The red tape is awful.
She smoothed a wisp of hair down on McCurdle's head.
He was fun, she said. I'll miss him on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Lula sneezed.
Damn cats. I gotta get out of here. I'm allergic to just about everything in this house. Cats and dead people, and pretty soon it's gonna be filled with cops.
Dolly looked at her watch.
I should probably cancel my service appointment.
You might want to do that, Lula said. But if we hurry things along, you could make lunch.
We should go out and wait for the police, Dolly said. They can never find this house. I don't know why. It's the house with the gnome, for goodness sakes.
Guess you're getting good at this, Lula said.
The husband before Dirk died 5 months ago. He should rest in peace. And before that was George.
We all meandered out of the house and stood blinking in the late morning sun. A cop car angled to a stop behind my Jeep, and Carl Costanza and Big Dog got out. Carl and I did communion together, and he was friends with Morelli. Carl looked at me and smiled.
I bet this is gonna be good, he said.
I have a dead FTA in there, I told him.
Did you kill him?
No. Looks to me like natural causes, but what do I know? Dolly said he just never woke up. Carl pulled on rubber gloves.
Gonna need more than that in there, Lula said. There's cats.
And she sneezed and farted.
Excuse me, she said.
An EMT truck turned the corner, and Big Dog flagged it down. I'll stop at the station later today for my paperwork, I said to Carl.
Don't rush. I have to get mine done first.
I'm sorry for your loss, I said to Dolly.
Thank you, she said. It was nice meeting you.
Lula and I got into the Jeep, and I found my way back to Greenwood. That was a downer, I said to Lula.
Yeah, she said. It was anticlimactic after waiting all this time to see the bigamist.
I can't figure out if I'm more depressed that Dirk died or that Dolly didn't know he was dead.
I take a philosophical view on these things since I'm an observer of human nature, Lula said. I figure you gotta have the right attitude about this stuff. Take Dolly, for instance. Dolly was gonna try to keep her lunch date, which is a good thing because life gotta go on. And even though he was dead, Dirk sort of looked like he was smiling.
He did look like he died smiling.
See? It's all part of the circle of life, Lula said. And pretty soon we'll be dead, too. Only you go first because you're older than me.
Do you have any donuts left? I need a donut.
I ate them all, but we can stop at the bakery again. They had some red velvet cupcakes that I'm pretty sure were made with beet juice. Either that or red dye number 13.
I hooked a left into the bakery lot and bought myself a donut with white icing and colorful sprinkles. This is a happy donut, I said to Lula.
Fucking A,
Lula said.
But then, I never saw a sad donut.
I ate my donut and felt much better, so I drove down Greenwood to Hamilton past the office and onto the government buildings on the river. It was lunchtime, and I was guessing Mickey Gritch would be hanging out looking to run some numbers.
Oh boy, Lula said when I pulled into the 7-Eleven lot on Marble Street. You're not gonna do what I think you're gonna do, are you?
I'm going to talk to Mickey Gritch. I spotted his car parked to the side of the lot. No other cars around it. It was early. Lunch hours hadn't kicked in yet. I pulled up beside him, and his tinted window rolled down. Mickey Gritch had white blonde hair cut in a 60s Beatle mop style. He had little pig eyes that were always behind shades, a big, pasty potato head, and a body gone soft. He was in his late 40s. And he was living proof that anyone could be successful at crime in Trenton if he truly worked at it.
What?
Mickey Gritch asked me. I want to talk to you about Vinny.
What about him?
No one wants to fork up the money.
Doesn't surprise me, Gritch said. He's a turd. Don't get me wrong, I like Vinny. We've done business for a lot of years, but he's still a turd.
Maybe we can make a deal.
Like what?
Like you don't kill him and he can get some kind of a payment plan?
Listen, if it was me, that would be okay. But it's not me. I don't have anything to do with it anymore. This is Bobby Sunflower's deal, and it's more complicated than you know.
Complicated how?
Just complicated. I don't know. I don't want to know. There's bad people involved. Badder than Bobby Sunflower.
He leaned out a little.
Is that Lula? Hey, Mama. Don't you hey, Mama, me, Lula said. I'll be out of a job if they off Vinny, and then what? I got bills to pay. I got a standard of living. I got a job for you, Gritch said.
Huh, Lula said.
I don't do that no more, you little run-ass Polish sausage.
The tinted window rolled up on Gritch's Mercedes. I put the Jeep in gear and drove out of the lot. Chapter 7
Things are going good today,
Lula said.
We haven't been shot at or nothing. Have you got the bottle with you?
No, I left it at home.
Imagine if you had the bottle.
I've got Chopper's file in my bag, I said to Lula. Pull it out and read me his address. I think he's off South Broad.
I'm not sure I want to go after someone named Chopper, Lula said.
Suppose he got his name chopping off fingers and toes. I don't want to lose none of mine. I couldn't wear peep-toe shoes. It would limit my fashion potential.
Does it say anything in his file about fingers or toes? Lula paged through the file.
No. His real name is Mortimer Gonzalez, but it says everyone calls him Chopper, and it says he got a pet named Mr. Jingles, and you want to be careful about Mr. Jingles. I hope it's not a cat. It sounds like a cat name. Just thinking about it makes my eyes itch.
Has he got priors?
Yeah, lots of them. All like this. All for dealing drugs. Don't see no assault with a deadly weapon in here. Looks to me like he's a businessman. Middle management.
Did Connie include a map?
Yeah. You have to turn right off Broad onto Cotter Street.
I drove down Broad, and I thought about Mickey Gritch. He said he was out of it. I hoped he wasn't so out of it that he couldn't lead me to Vinny. And what the heck did he mean when he said it was complicated and there were bad people involved? I thought this was about a simple gambling debt.
Hey, Lula said, you just drove past the street.
I hooked a U-turn and doubled back to Cotter. I was thinking about the conversation with Gritch. How bad would you have to be worse than Bobby Sunflower?
I hear you, Lula said. I think Vinny got himself into a real mess this time.
I drove one block down Cotter, and Lula counted off numbers.
Here, she said. He's living over this plum and supply warehouse. Must be a loft apartment.
Cotter Street was an odd mix of light industrial and residential. Low-income single-family houses were mixed between auto body shops, small warehouse facilities, and a variety of building supply businesses. I drove around the block to see if it was intersected by an alley. Turned out it was, so I drove down the alley and idled behind the plumbing supply warehouse, looking up at the second-floor loft.
How do you want to do this? Lula asked. Girl Scout cookies? Pizza delivery? Census survey?
There were stairs leading up to a small deck and a back door. So far as I could tell, this was the only entrance. I'm in the mood to just go up and kick the door down, I said to Lula.
Me too. That was going to be my next suggestion.
Lula looked over at me.
You learn how to kick a door down?
No, I thought you'd do it.
I'm wearing 4-inch slut shoes. I can't kick a door down in slut shoes. It isn't done. You need boots to kick a door down. Everyone knows that.
Then I guess we'll ring the doorbell and identify ourselves.
Whatever, Lula said.
I parked behind a rusted-out Econoline van, and Lula and I got out and walked up the stairs to the deck. There was no doorbell, so I knocked on the door. No answer. I knocked again. Still no answer. I pulled my phone out and dialed Chopper's number. We could hear the phone ringing inside, but no one was answering that either.
Too bad we don't know how to break the door down, Lula said. He might be hiding under the bed.
I stood on tiptoes and felt over the door jamb and found a key.
If I was in this neighborhood and I had a bunch of drug money and drugs stashed here, I'd be more careful about my key, Lula said.
Maybe he has an alarm system. I plugged the key into the door, held my breath, and pushed the door open. No alarm sounded. I looked around for an alarm keypad, none visible.
Guess he's just one of those trusting people, Lula said. Sort of refreshing in this day and age, especially in the criminal element.
We were standing in a large room that had a bare-bones galley kitchen at one end, a kitchen table and 4 chairs, and beyond that, a couch and 2 easy chairs in front of a large flat-screen TV. There was a door to the right, which I assumed led to the bedroom.
It's just amazing how normal a criminal could be, Lula said. This looks just like any other person's apartment. Of course, you gotta sell drugs to afford something this big, but aside from that, you gotta admit it's real normal.
She looked around.
I don't see Mr. Jingles, and I don't think it's a cat because I'm not sneezing. I bet it's a cute puppy or something.
I don't see any dog bowls or dog toys.
Here, Mr. Jingles, Lula called. Here, boy. Here, Mr. Jingles. Come to Lula.
There was a rustling sound behind the couch, and a 6-foot alligator padded out, focused on Lula, and lunged.
Yow, Lula said, stumbling back, knocking into me. Help! Watch out! Get out of my way!
I was across the room like a shot, with Lula on my heels, pushing me through the door, slamming the door behind us.
I think I wet myself, Lula said. Do I look like I wet myself?
I was beyond noticing if she wet herself. I had my hand over my heart and my mouth open, sucking air, and my heart was knocking around so hard in my chest my vision was blurred. I think we're done here, I said to Lula.
Fucking A, Lula said. Don't forget to put the key back or Chopper won't be able to get in to feed Mr. Jingles if he locks himself out.
I returned the key to its hiding place, and the gator slammed against the door on the inside of Chopper's apartment, and Lula and I flew down the stairs, missing a couple, both of us sliding halfway on our asses. We got to our feet, the gator banged against the door again, and Lula and I ran screaming for the Jeep. 10 minutes later, I parked behind Lula's Firebird in front of the bond's office. I guess that's why Chopper doesn't need an alarm system, I said, finally finding my voice.
What kind of man keeps an alligator in his house? That's just wrong. Where does he poop? You ever think of that? And he got a lot of nerve naming him something cute like Mr. Jingles. That's a deceptive name. And it was all your fault anyway because you left your bottle home.
My phone rang, and I picked it up to Morelli.
I need to talk to you,
Morelli said.
I caught the McCuddle fiasco. I'm sure the autopsy will show natural causes, but I need you to fill out some paperwork. If you meet me at Pino's in 10 minutes, I'll buy you lunch.
Deal.
What was that about?
Lula asked. Lunch with Morelli. He got assigned to McCuddle, and he's got my paperwork. Pino's serves Italian food Berg style. Greasy pizza you have to fold to eat. Meatball subs. Sausage sandwiches. Spaghetti with red sauce. Worthless, uninteresting salad with iceberg lettuce and pale tomatoes. Bud on tap. And red table wine. It has a dark, carved mahogany bar and a side room with tables for families and couples who don't want to watch hockey on the television hanging over the liquor collection. Morelli was waiting for me at a table, choosing not to be distracted by ESPN recaps on the bar television. He had a Coke in front of him and a bread basket. I ordered a chicken parmesan sandwich and a Coke, and Morelli ordered a sausage sandwich. When the waitress left, Morelli handed me a stack of papers.
I don't need these in a rush, he said, but I know you have to hand them in to get your capture fee.
I shoved the papers into my messenger bag. It was a shock to find McCurdle dead like that.
Yeah, but he actually looked kind of happy.
He liked being married. Morelli smiled.
He liked being married too much.
I have a hypothetical question for you. If Bobby Sunflower was mixed up with someone more scary than him, who would it be?
A couple people come to mind. Can you be more specific?
Suppose Vinny was also mixed up in it.
That doesn't narrow it down a lot. Vinny was into a lot of illegal stuff. Prostitution, gambling, recreational drugs. In his defense, I have to say, to my knowledge, he always only bought and never sold.
Let's narrow it down to gambling.
That's tough. I think Sunflower kept that to himself.
Morelli picked a breadstick out of the basket.
I'm guessing this isn't all that hypothetical. Do you want to tell me about it?
You'd have police issues. Morelli leaned back in his chair and locked eyes with me, serious.
If you were in danger, I'd expect you to tell me.
I'm okay. Aside from an alligator encounter this morning, everything's under control.
Were you at the zoo?
Potter Street.
I imagine you're talking about Chopper's alligator. How big is he now?
Has to be 6 foot.
I've never seen him, but I've heard stories.
I buttered a piece of bread. He's prehistoric. Scared the bejesus out of me. He came out from behind Chopper's couch and snapped at Lula. Lula and I took off and fell halfway down the stairs and then screamed all the way to the car. Now that I think about it, it was sort of embarrassing.
Did you apprehend Chopper?
No, he wasn't home.
But he left his door open and unlocked?
Something like that, I said. Morelli looked around for the waitress.
Maybe I should have ordered a drink.
Feeling the need for alcohol?
Yeah, you have that effect on me. My biggest fear is that someday I'm going to show up to arrest someone, and it's going to be you.
Would you do that? Morelli gave up on the waitress and slouched down a little.
I'd put the cuffs on you.
And then what? I asked. His mouth curved into a small smile, and his eyes darkened.
Do you want to know the details?
My turn to smile. Not here.
You're teasing me,
Morelli said.
I like it.
That led to a long silence while we both considered the next move. It would be easy to fall back into an intimate relationship with Morelli. He was fun and sexy and easy to live with, and I liked his dog. He could also be difficult to live with. He hated my job, and he insisted on controlling the television remote. We had a history of breaking up and eventually getting back together. I suppose it suited our current lifestyle, but it was probably establishing bad habits.
Do you remember why we broke up?
Morelli asked. You needed space.
I needed toast. You ate the last piece of bread and you didn't get more.
I was busy. I forgot.
You're supposed to remember those things. You're a woman.
I'm supposed to remember toast?
Yes.
What about you? What are you supposed to remember?
Condoms.
Here's the scary part. It sort of made sense. So what's new with you other than McCurdle? I asked. Any interesting murders?
McCurdle's about as good as it gets. After him, it's same old, same old. Gang executions, vehicular homicide, accidental death with a blunt instrument.
The waitress brought our sandwiches and we dug in. What can you tell me about Chopper? I said to Morelli.
He's middle management drugs. He used to do enforcement for Ari Santini. If you fell behind on your protection payments, Chopper would shorten your finger. That's how he got his name. One day he shortened the wrong finger and got his hand smashed with a baseball bat. Had a hard time getting a good grip on finger-chopping tools after that, so he got bumped over to sales.
Oh, great. Lula was right. Any ideas on how I can catch Chopper? I asked Morelli.
I'd avoid his apartment.
A glob of red sauce slipped out of my sandwich and landed on my t-shirt. Crap, I said, looking down at the sauce. Morelli's eyes darkened a little, and for a moment I thought he was going to lick the sauce off. And then I wasn't sure if it was because he wanted the sauce or because it was on my breast. I already figured out the apartment avoidance, I said, dabbing at my shirt with my napkin. What else?
I don't know. He's not in my circle of friends.
Morelli tapped a number into his phone and asked about Chopper. He got off the phone, wrote a bunch of addresses on a napkin, and gave me the napkin.
Mid-morning he'll be downtown,
Morelli said.
He moves around, but he's usually on Lower Stark. Drives a black Lexus. He has a lunch trade going at a couple fast food places around the arena. Then he goes home to stash money and package up more stuff. He's somewhere around the food court at Quaker Bridge Mall early in the evening, and then he moves to a multiplex parking lot, usually in Hamilton Township.
He covers a lot of ground.
Yeah, Morelli said. He hustles.
And the alligator protects the drugs and the money?
Looks that way.
Two questions. If you guys know where he sells drugs, why don't you arrest him?
We did. He's out on bail, and it's not that easy. He's sneaky.
Okay, second question. Why doesn't someone walk into his apartment and shoot the alligator and take the drugs and the money? Morelli stopped eating and looked at me.
You aren't thinking of doing that, are you?
Of course not. It was a hypothetical question. Honestly, do you really think I'd shoot an alligator?
No,
Morelli said.
But Lula might.
Lula couldn't hit an alligator if it was 3 feet from her and already dead. I shoot with my eyes closed, and I'm a better shot than Lula. Morelli's phone buzzed, and he looked at the readout.
I have to go,
he said. Something bad happen?
I'm a homicide detective. If they're paging me, it's never good.
He stood and dropped a couple 20s on the table.
That should cover it,
he said.
Call me if you get lonely.
What kind of an invitation is that? I asked.
I was going for friendly without being pushy.
I shoved back from the table and stood with him. You succeeded. Chapter 8. I stopped home to change my shirt, and at the last moment I decided to take my bottle. I mean, it couldn't hurt to carry it around, right? I left my apartment and I drove past the bonds office toward the arena. I cruised the area around the arena looking for Chopper's Lexus, checking out the fast food places Morelli's source had listed. I hung there until 2 o'clock without seeing a single black Lexus SUV. I took Broad to Cotter and drove the alley behind Chopper's loft. The black SUV was parked in Chopper's small backyard. Chopper was at home with Mr. Jingles. I returned to Broad, and I was almost at Hamilton when Chet called.
Gritch left the 7-Eleven and drove across the river. I have him at an isolated house a half mile off Lower Bucks Road. He's been there for 10 minutes now. I'm programming it into your nav system.
Thanks, I'll check it out.
Do you need backup?
Do I have a choice? There was a long pause.
No,
Chet finally said. It used to bother me that Ranger monitored my every move, but I've gotten used to it, and for the most part, I'm able to ignore it. Truth is, I'm not all that good at being a bounty hunter, and Ranger's overprotectiveness has saved my life more than once. I stopped at the bonds office to get Lula, and I ran into Walter Moonman Dumphy coming out of the used bookstore next to the bonds office. Mooner is my age, but he lives on an entirely different planet. He's slim, with light brown shoulder-length hair parted in the middle. He was wearing a vintage Metallica t-shirt, jeans with holes in the knees, and black-and-white chucks.
Dudette, Mooner said to me. Long time no see. How's life?
It's good, I told him. What's new with you?
I got a new casa. It's El Loco Mobile Casa.
It took me a moment to realize he was talking about the rusted-out motorhome at curbside. You're living in this RV?
Affirmative. Totally cool, right? And the feng shui is excellent. Like, if I'm getting bad vibes, I just park this sweetheart in a different direction. And I have a dish, so I didn't have to give up my position on the Cosmic Alliance.
I had no idea what he meant by the Cosmic Alliance, and I didn't want to take the time to ask. That's great, I said. I have to go to work now.
Yeah, me too.
You're working?
Gotta feed the love bus. Doesn't run on air, dude.
What are you doing?
I'm walking dogs. I pick them up and take them to the park. They crap their brains out, and I take them home.
He gave me his card. Golden Aura Dog Service. Happy is as happy does. Nice, I said.
I'm hella entrepreneurial, Mooner said. It's a gift.
I pocketed the card and went into the bonds office. Gritch is at a house in Bucks County, I said to Lula. I'm going to take a look. Want to come with me?
Sure, Lula said. Haven't got anything better to do.
How about filing? Connie said.
Filing isn't better, Lula said. Filing gives me a cramp in my head. Personally, I think you should just throw all those files away. We never look at them. What good are they? When was the last time you looked at one of them files?
I'd look at them if I could find them, Connie said.
She turned to me.
Speaking of files, I got a new one for you. Lenny Pickerall. It should be an easy capture.
Wait until you hear this, Lula said. This is a beauty. This guy stole toilet paper out of all the rest stops on the turnpike. He said he was protesting the inferior quality of rest stop toilet paper.
It didn't seem like such a horrible crime. They arrested him for that?
Actually, they arrested him for making an illegal U-turn across the grass median, Connie said. When they checked out his trunk, they found it was full of toilet paper. And then they went to his house, and it was full of toilet paper. The guy has been stealing toilet paper from the turnpike for almost a year.
And now he's FTA? I asked.
Probably stealing more toilet paper even as we speak, Lula said. Sounds to me like an addiction.
I rammed the file into my bag. Adios, I'm off to find Vinny.
Me too, Lula said. I'm gonna find the heck out of him.
I crossed the Delaware River into Pennsylvania and went north on Lower Bucks Road, watching my nav screen. Lower Bucks Road is a two-lane, fairly well-traveled road that runs along the river. It's a mix of expensive homes, moderate homes, and woods, not a lot of commercial property. 10 minutes down Lower Bucks Road, I was told to turn left onto a dirt road. It was a wooded area, and the dirt road was single lane. I knew the house was a half mile in. I crept along, not wanting to raise dust. After a half mile, I came to the house. It was a brown shingle two-story cottage-type house. Big, maybe 7,000 square feet. A Bucks County manor house. Professional landscaping. Circular drive court. Not shabby. Probably Vinny didn't want to be rescued. He probably had a jacuzzi and a four-poster bed. On the other hand, they were going to kill him on Friday. I continued on down the road past two more houses before the road abruptly ended. I turned and slowly cruised past the brown shingle house for a second time. Gritch's Mercedes was parked in the drive court, plus two other cars. One was an SUV, and the other a Ferrari.
Hard to believe you'd want to stash a perv like Vinny in a nice house like this, Lula said. Maybe this is Bobby's Sunflower's house, in which case we'd be sitting in Bobby's driveway, and that might not be healthy.
Good point. I drove back to the road, pulled to the side, and parked. A half hour later, Mickey Gritch turned out of the dirt road and headed south toward Trenton. The Ferrari followed. I called Chet, gave him the Ferrari's plate number, and asked him to find owners for the car and the house. He called me back in 5 minutes.
The car belongs to Bobby Sunflower, Chet said. The house is owned by a holding company, and Sunflower owns a holding company.
Can you find out if the holding company owns other properties?
Sure, I'll get back to you.
This is like having your own private detective agency, Lula said. Does Ranger keep a tally of services? Do you gotta pay up one way or another at the end of the month? I tell you, I wouldn't mind doing that. He is heart-stopping hot. I had my way, I'd spread sauce on him and work him like a rib.
The thought of working Ranger like a rib gave me a hot flash that prickled from my scalp clear down to my doodah.
You just turned red, Lula said. I never seen you turn red like that before.
It was the rib thing.
Yeah, Lula said. I get like that about ribs, too. I think we need to go to Tony's when we get back to town. He makes kick-ass ribs.
We sat there for 10 minutes more, waiting for the SUV, but the SUV didn't drive by. I'm gonna leave the car here and walk back to the house, I told Lula.
I'll come with you. Good thing I dressed down to sneakers today.
I checked Lula out. She was wearing pink wedge sneakers loaded up with rhinestones, a super short stretch denim skirt, and a way too small pink t-shirt decorated with silver glitter that was flaking off on everything. It was casual Tuesday. I was in my usual outfit of jeans, sneakers, and a slightly stretchy V-neck t-shirt. No glitter, no red sauce stains. Here's a plan, I said, starting out on the dirt road. If we hear a car coming, we jump off the road and hide in the woods.
Sure, I can do that, Lula said. Only I hope we don't have to, because I have vegetation issues. I don't do the nature thing. Remember when we were down in the Pine Barrens? I hated that shit. I'm a city girl. I like cement. As far as I'm concerned, you could cement this whole country over.
Maybe you want to stay in the Jeep, I said.
That might be a good idea. I could stay and make sure it don't get stolen.
The road was hard-packed dirt, and either side was forested. The sun filtered through the leaf canopy, and the air smelled like the beginning of summer. I would have enjoyed the walk if only I hadn't been terrified Bobby Sunflower would return and run me down. I moved from the road to the woods just before I got within sight of the house. I'm not as bad as Lula when it comes to nature, but I'm not a tree nymph either. I've seen Ranger move through brush and never make a sound. As hard as I try to be quiet, I'm more of a thrasher. I crept along the edge of the property, looking for movement inside the house. The SUV was still parked just past the door. Shades hadn't been drawn. There was no way of knowing who belonged to the SUV. No way of knowing if Vinny was there. I returned to the Jeep and pulled myself up behind the wheel.
Well? Lula wanted to know.
I have no clue. I couldn't see anything in the house, and no one came out.
Are you carrying the bottle?
Yes.
Huh. You think the bottle would do something for you?
I turned the key and put the Jeep into gear. I didn't get caught.
That's true, Lula said. So it could be working.
It was after 4 o'clock when we got back to the bond's office. Connie was painting her nails and looking not happy. So, I said,
I got a call from Bobby Sunflower at 2 o'clock. He said he was getting impatient, and then he put Vinny on, and Vinny begged me to get the money, and then someone started shrieking. I guess that was Vinny. And the line went dead.
Bobby Sunflower was at the Pennsylvania house at 2 o'clock,
Lula said to me.
Now we know where they got Vinny.
His car was at the house, I said. We never actually saw Bobby Sunflower.
That man ain't gonna let nobody drive his Ferrari, Lula said. That's a personal Ferrari.
Probably true.
They got Vinny at this house in Pennsylvania, Lula said to Connie. We know exactly where it is. We just gotta rescue him now. My visa bill is due any day. I can't take no chances.
Here was the deal. While I was looking for Vinny, this sounded like a noble idea. Now that we might have found him and had to go in guns blazing, I was thinking, not so good. Morelli could pull this off, but I couldn't ask him without agreeing to police involvement. Ranger would have Vinny out in a heartbeat. But Ranger was in Atlanta. And even if Ranger were here, it wouldn't feel right to make him do my dirty work. Maybe instead of rescuing Vinny, we should try to raise the money, I said.
Okay, Connie said. How?
We all thought about it.
We could have a bake sale, Lula said.
You can't bake, Stephanie can't bake, and I don't want to bake, Connie said. And we need $786,000. That's a lot of cake. Plus, the interest grows on that every day.
Now that I think about it, Lula said, if I had that kind of money, I wouldn't need this job. The bonds office is now owned by a venture capital group called the Wellington Company. Last I looked, they weren't happy with the office performance. I don't think we want to rock that boat by asking him for a loan.
Let's just rescue him and get it over with, Lula said. How hard could it be? There was one SUV sitting in the driveway, so I'm thinking there's Vinny tied to a chair in the kitchen and some goon in the living room watching TV.
And, I asked,
and we go in, shoot the goon, rescue Vinny, and we go home.
I'm not comfortable with shooting the goon, I told her, and we aren't 100% sure Vinny is in the house.
I know, Connie said. Stink bomb. We lob a stink bomb in there, everyone runs out, and in the confusion, we rescue Vinny.
I like it, Lula said to Connie. Boy, you're good. I could see you done this before.
High school, Connie said. I was a stink bomb queen. One time I stink bombed the principal's house, and he blamed it on Jimmy Rubinowski.
What happened to Jimmy Rubinowski? Lula wanted to know.
Nothing. He was a football player. He was golden.
Is this stink bomb going to damage the house? I asked.
No, Connie said. It takes a couple days for the smell to go away, but then everything's good, except for the window you broke getting the bomb into the house.
I hate to be a wet blanket, but I don't like doing this without making sure Vinny's in the house, I said. Lula and I broke a few minor laws from time to time in the pursuit of felons, but for the most part, we had paperwork giving us wide authority for search and capture. We all knew Bobby Sunflower was pond scum, but that didn't give me the right to lob a stink bomb through his window.
This isn't a whim, Lula said. There's circumstantial evidence. And anyway, this here's Bobby Sunflower we're talking about. He probably gets stink bombed all the time.
How about this, Connie said. I go home and whip up a stink bomb, and then we go back to the house at night so we can creep around better and look in windows. And then if it looks like Vinny's in the house, we bazooka the bomb in.
I guess that's okay, I said, unless Sunflower has family in the house.
Sunflower hadn't got family, Lula said. Only thing he'd have in the house is armed entourage and maybe a hoe or two.
The sun goes down around 8:30, Connie said. So let's meet here at the office at 8:15, and everyone wear black.
Black's not my best color, Lula said.
Chapter 9. I left the bonds office, drove to Quaker Bridge Mall, and went straight to the food court. I had a photo of Chopper, and I'd become pretty good at spotting drug dealers. Not to mention, I had the lucky bottle. So maybe with all these things going for me, I could snag Chopper. I got a cheeseburger and a vanilla shake, and I sat at a table that would allow me to see almost the entire food court area. According to the photo and file description, Chopper was a Hispanic male, 5'9" tall, medium build, no piercings or tattoos, a smashed right hand, 45 years old, one eyebrow. I finished my burger and shake, and I sat for a while trying to look like I was waiting for someone. I got up and walked around a little. I bought a chocolate chip cookie. I sat at a different table. I did another tour of the food court. I walked beyond the food court and looked around. No Chopper. I bought an ice cream cone and I sat and ate it. Still no Chopper. By 7 o'clock, I'd had enough of the food court, so I went home and changed into black commando gear. Black jeans, black t-shirt, black sweatshirt. Lula and Connie were already at the office when I pulled in. Connie was dressed just like me. Lula looked like an ad for S&M clothes for plus-sized women. Black leather boots up to her thighs, black stretch skirt that hung 2 inches below her ass, black spandex wrap shirt.
I got my gun, my stun gun, my pepper spray, my flashlight, Lula said. And then I got my other gun and a bread knife.
I have an Uzi and the stink bombs, Connie said.
They looked at me. I had hairspray and a nail file, but it didn't stack up next to guns and stink bombs. I have the lucky bottle, I told them.
Now you're talking, Lula said.
Connie grabbed her purse, and we followed her out of the office.
I've got my brother Tony's car, Connie said. It's a POS Explorer, and no one will pay any attention to it sitting on the side of the road.
Lula got in front with Connie, and I got in back with the box of stink bombs. The adapted for stink bombs rocket launcher was behind me. It was deep dusk when we drove over the bridge to Pennsylvania, and by the time we reached the dirt road, it was black as pitch out. No moon. Overcast sky.
Connie pulled off to the shoulder and parked on Lower Bucks Road just before our turnoff. We all piled out and waited while Connie loaded the rocket launcher up with a stink bomb.
It's a big house, Lula said. How many of these bombs do you think we gotta fire off?
One will probably do it, Connie said, slinging the Uzi strap over her shoulder.
But we could do an upstairs and a downstairs if we want to be sure of covering the whole house.
What's it smell like?
The one I made today smells like a combination of cat pee and diarrhea fart, Connie said, handing me the box with the extra bombs. Maybe it has a hint of throw-up.
We walked about 20 feet down the road and had no idea where we were.
I don't know if I'm in the middle of the road or the middle of the forest, Lula said. I can't see nothing. There's no light here. There's whoops.
Are you okay? I asked.
No, I'm not okay. I'm on my ass, and I found the edge of the road on account of I'm in a bush. Where the heck are you?
Everyone stay still until our eyes adjust, I said.
How long's that take? Lula wanted to know.
A couple minutes, I think, I told her.
It's been a couple minutes, Lula said, and I'm not adjusted. I think that adjusting is a lot of hooey.
Give it a minute more, I said. We waited a minute more, but we still couldn't see.
I'll show you adjusting, Lula said,
and she flipped her flashlight on. So much for the stealth approach. We followed Lula and her flashlight until we reached the grassy area around the house. Once we were out from under trees, we were at least able to differentiate structure from sky. Light blazed from several windows. A television flickered in a downstairs room. A figure moved from one room to the next. The SUV was still parked by the door.
We need to get closer, Connie said. Someone should run across the lawn and look in the windows.
Someone? I asked.
Yeah, Connie said. You.
Why me? It's your job. I'm the office person, and you're the sneaking around chasing down bad guys person.
What about Lula? Why can't Lula be the sneaking around person?
Yeah, Lula said. What about me? I could sneak your ass off.
So let me get this straight, Connie said to Lula. You're the one wants to get thrown under the bus.
Since you put it that way, it occurs to me Stephanie has the skill sets needed for this operation, Lula said.
I did an eye roll that no one could see because it was too friggin' dark. I set the box of stink bombs on the ground and laid my purse on it, and I jogged across the lawn to the house. I pushed my way into some big azalea bushes and stood on tiptoe to look in the window. A 50-something guy was sitting on the couch watching television. He was in his socks, kicked back, with a bag of chips and a beer on the coffee table in front of him. A second guy was slouched in a lazy boy-type chair. I struggled to get out of the azaleas, and I moved around the house, peeking in windows, listening for conversation. I got to the kitchen, and there was a tray on the kitchen counter with some dirty dishes and a can of Coke tipped on its side. There was also a couple dishes, some silverware, and two glasses on the counter by the sink. It could be that someone was served on a tray and two people ate in the kitchen. Not conclusive proof Vinny was being held in the house, but it was worth considering. I jogged back to the woods where Connie and Lula were waiting and told them what I'd found.
I say we rocket a bomb in there and see what comes out, Lula said.
Suppose only the guys watching television come out, I said. Is someone going in to make sure Vinny isn't there?
That would be you again, Lula said, since you're so good at finding people.
No, I shook my head. No, 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 I already did my thing. Someone else's turn. I'm not going into a house that smells like cat pee and diarrhea fart.
I'd be happy to do it, but I got asthma, Lula said. I might have an attack in there. It could kill me.
We were standing at the edge of the woods arguing, and headlights appeared on the dirt road. The car was traveling at a good speed coming in from Lower Bucks Road, almost on top of us before we saw it. We dove for cover, flat on our stomachs, hidden in shadow. The car roared into the circular driveway, stopped in front of the brown shingle house, and bang, fired off an object that broke the foyer window. Bang, another shot fired at an upstairs window, and the car spun its wheels and careened out of the driveway back toward the road. It was a dark-colored SUV. I couldn't see the plate or the make. We got to our feet and stood in shock for a moment.
What the heck was that about? Lula wanted to know.
In a moment, we knew what it was about, because the inside of the house was engulfed in flames and smoke billowed out the broken foyer.